welcome to A Court of Three Strands, the Palatine Institute's podcast on creating Christian culture.
Through this show, we hope to provide a resource of education and encouragement for students, parents, and leaders about the revival of Christian values in our community.
On A Court of Three Strands, we'll focus on the three foundational strands that make a strong, flourishing Christian culture: the church, the family, and education. We desire to order these things around God's word to advance Christ's kingdom and so glorify him and bless our community. My name is Ron Young, former headmaster at Providence Academy and founder of the Palatine Institute.
And I'm Noah Tetzner, a curious student of classical education and podcast producer.
Through our conversations, we look forward to sharing fellowship, knowledge, and practical wisdom for his glory here on the Court of Three Strands podcast.
Without further ado, let's get on with the show.
Hello and welcome back to A Court of Three Strands. We are in season 9, which is all about hope. And following our fiery conversation last week, we're going to do part 2 of The World We Have Made. Where we are and how did we get here?
Yeah, well, that was last week, where we are and how do we get here. And today we want to talk about the fruit.
The fruit of that.
Of that.
Okay.
Yes, perfect. Of that fiery mess.
It is.
Yeah. Sounded very hopeful, didn't it?
Yeah, yeah.
No, I think I got a little worked up and it just frustrates me because it seems like there's all this stuff that's gone on in the world. Mm-hmm. And the world, instead of repenting, it's like double downing on all the stupid stuff.
Yeah. Yeah.
Even though they see the harm it's doing to their children, to the world, to the future generations. Mm-hmm. And we just keep going.
Yeah.
And that's the hard part. So today I want to talk about the fruit of it. So just in sum, last week, if you didn't hear last week's,
we lost some listeners, but we also gained some listeners.
Yeah, maybe don't listen to it right before you go to bed. No, I'm just kidding.
Yeah.
Anyway, in general, what I want to say is that there was this, basically when there's societal upheaval. In Europe, I think it was the World War I that kind of wrecked the confidence in Christendom and Christianity. In America, I think Vietnam and below. And so you have the baby boomers kind of most affected by this.
Yeah.
You have something has to replace Christian worldview and morality. Mm-hmm. And in our country, it's been the steady progression of neo-Marxist and postmodern thought. And you'll have to listen to last week's episodes. I don't want to repeat it all.
Yeah.
But in general, to sum up, it's the idea of labeling people victims versus oppressors, and also this lack of confidence in objective truth. And the idea is that people in power get to make truth claims in order to promote their version of justice, which is, I think, the overthrow of the oppressor.
Right.
In essence, is kind of what's going on. And this is what's happened. And the people in power are the ones that get to change the dictionary, right? So one of the fights of our modern day is who gets to say what means.
Yeah.
Right. So marriage, for instance, has always and everywhere since the beginning of time, because this is an institution that was God's idea.
Yeah.
And it's in all cultures everywhere of a man and a woman who unite together and have families.
Yeah.
Right. And we recently, this is the Obergefell decision, basically has made marriage no longer about procreation. Mm-hmm. And it's only a legal, it's only a legal thing granted by the state, which is dumb because people are getting married way before the state even existed.
Right.
But because it's now open to men or to women,
yeah,
it renders marriage between a man and a woman as nothing more than a legal thing rather than a covenant before God for the purpose of procreation. Yeah. This is also going to put our children in jeopardy, even though we don't realize this, but that's going to be one of the fruits of this whole thing.
Yeah.
What I want to talk about is just some of the, so they got to redefine marriage.
Mm-hmm.
And they've redefined sex. Sex does no longer has the essence of procreation. It's just about pleasure.
Yeah.
And so there's no need to have any boundaries on sex. So it's just whatever you do. And
right.
Right. So it's just made a mess of things. So some of the fruit of the world that we have now made in rejecting God and his word.
Yeah.
And come up with these other systems of thought and of justice is, extreme anxiety.
Yeah.
Because our world is now divorced from reality.
Yeah.
Right. Our kids are growing up today having to determine for themselves what gender they are.
Wow.
Think about this, Noah.
Can I just ask? So even those radical, cosmopolitan fruitcakes that are pushing these extreme agendas, you think they also have this same anxiety?
Well, they have different anxieties. I think you might know this, but
yeah,
all the very rich, powerful elites all believe in marriage and family. They're just pushing it on this other stuff on everyone else.
Yeah. Yeah. Gotcha. Okay.
You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like if you're going to accumulate wealth, mm-hmm. and you need to have a marriage that stays together, and then you have kids to pass it down.
Yeah.
And they stay married.
Yeah. Yeah. Right.
It's just all the schmucks who listen to them.
Gotcha.
It's all the university professor that's railing against this bourgeois world,
yeah,
lives one.
That's interesting. So I guess like people who would say a Christian culture is not a good thing for society,
yeah,
they still within themselves have a great anxiety because they don't live within the Christian culture, right?
We'll get into that in just a second. I just want to you brought up the side thing.
Yeah, yeah.
So I'll give you an example.
Okay.
I used to, when I pastored a church, used to walk over to UWGB to their philosophy house because it was just down the road from my church. And when I was reading different various philosophical works that I didn't feel comfortable, I felt much more comfortable reading theology than philosophy. And I just wanted to make sure I understood what the author was. I was trying to read more Kant and Hegel and other people that I can't stand, but and so I was having these conversations with a lot of these philosophy professors. All of them were atheists, except for one who was an agnostic. And one time we're just talking about morality as being completely a human construct. Like there's no God, there's no essence to being human. It's just been we're a product of evolution, and this is where we're at, and there is no real morality other than what society decides.
Yeah.
Right. So there's no objective morality. It's all subjective. So I said, so what about, I think I said something about traditional morality and sex and marriage and stuff like that. And I go, hey, Jim, you have three daughters, don't you? And he goes, yeah. I go, is that what you teach them? He goes, no.
Yeah. Right. Yeah. Yeah.
No, I don't teach them that sex is just whatever you want. You know, he goes, no, I talked to him about placing healthy boundaries in, and I don't. So you're saying you're not encouraging them to explore themselves here in high school? And it's like, and he just kind of laughed. And I was saddened by this. I'm glad he wasn't trying to get his kids to live out his own philosophy.
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean?
Right.
Because he knows it would be ruinous to them.
Even though he
champions
that philosophy.
Even though it's what he teaches.
Wow.
So it's okay if all these other students live with this subjective morality and sleep around.
Wow.
He just doesn't want his daughters to do it because it would be harmful to them.
Right. Yeah.
So that's just a little side thing.
It's interesting.
But anxiety. So let's just, yeah. I'll just start off with this. I was born in 1967, and I was raised in a culture that because I was a boy, I was going to get married and have a family. And my big decisions in life will be what kind of job I'll get, if I need to go to college, which school I'd go to. Mm-hmm. That's it. Right. So all the major decisions really are made. Like, it's just part of it's just natural.
Yeah.
You grow up and the boys are going to become men and get married and be husbands and fathers.
Yeah.
The girls are going to grow up and they're going to be wives and mothers. And that's, you know, and then the little things like,
yeah,
which kind of job, do I go to college or not? Right. Those are big decisions and they cause some sort of anxiety.
That's
but kids today are going to grow up and everything is a choice.
Yeah.
Everything is a choice.
Yeah.
And the pressure on parents is not to put pressure on their kids, which is stupid. We need to train our children in the way that they're to go. And so what's happening is that children are being trained, just not by parents.
Yeah.
They're being trained by the TV, by the social media, by their teachers in school.
Yeah.
They're being trained to live for themselves.
Yeah.
And they're being trained that their parents don't know anything. They're being trained.
Yeah.
Right. And the purpose of it all is to separate generations so that more and more people will see the center of their life and of ordering principles being the government. Right. That's back to that Marxist.
Or themselves, idea. Right.
Or, well, that's, yeah, yes, but,
yeah,
but the people who think that they're living for themselves and they're the island tend to also have this real high dependency
on the government. That's very true.
To tell them what's right and wrong, what's
right.
Cool or not, and you know, that type of thing.
Yeah.
And the entertainment and media, you know, all the stuff that's together.
Yeah.
So the issue though is that it's all anxiousness. It's all they're surrounded by it. So here's another part. As growing up in a culturally Christian time, if I wanted to play with people, so first of all, we didn't have personal computers and phones and stuff to entertain us. We had to go find our own entertainment, and our parents would just basically kick us out of the house, and they didn't want us sitting around. We'd have to go outside and play.
It's awesome.
And if I want to play with other people, I'd have to go ask people to play with me. I'd literally go to my neighbor's doors and knock on their door and see if their son or daughter can play. And so sometimes they're younger than me, sometimes they're older than me, sometimes they're my own grade. I just needed the people to play. We need enough people to play baseball.
Yeah.
So I'm going to ask older kids to play. I'm going to ask younger kids to play. I just need enough people to have a team.
Yeah.
Basketball or football or whatever it might be.
Ugh.
And the chances of me liking all those people in my neighborhood is zero. Like you don't like everyone, but if you want to play, you're still going to ask them to play. And so you just did.
Yeah.
And inevitably things are going to go haywire and someone's going to do something and you're going to have a fight or you're going to argue or you're going to get hurt or something. And we lived in a Christian culture that expected if someone hurt you, or you hurt someone, you were responsible to go over to that person's house, knock on the door, apologize to them, ask for forgiveness.
Yeah.
And then they're expected to forgive you. Mm-hmm. And then you're forced to go play with each other again.
Yeah.
Reconcile. Like this was universal.
Yeah.
That's the way it was. And you know, you did something wrong at school and your parents go to parent teacher conference or whatever, or you get a note home. Everyone believes the teacher and you get in trouble. You got in trouble at school, you get in trouble at home. And everyone worked in that direction.
Yeah.
Today, mm-hmm. today, this doesn't happen that often. Generally, people are going to stay to themselves.
Yeah.
The kids are taught to not trust other people. Like, imagine parents telling their kids to go walk around the neighborhood knocking on people's doors to see if people can play. It just doesn't happen much anymore.
No.
And then, you know, to have events or athletics without parents involved. I mean, you sometimes see it at a park where you get people playing basketball or hoops, but.
And don't you think that, like, the current culture, in terms of, like, conflict resolution, everybody's just told to ignore?
Yes. I was going to say that. So yeah. I've even had parents at Providence Academy. We'd be in a meeting talking about this instance. You see the parents turn to their child and go, I just want you to ignore them. Like, don't play with them. Don't ignore them. And I just want to slap them. Like, yeah. What are you doing to your kid?
Yeah.
No, of course they're supposed to. They need to learn how to play with people they don't get along with, and they also need to learn how to confront people, and they need to be able to forgive people, and they also need to own their part to it and ask for forgiveness too.
Yeah,
we need to be reconciled with another. Instead, kids are learning how to cancel each other.
So
they live in this constant anxiety about being canceled. When I spoke at UWGB last year at their Ratio Christi conference, one of the things I asked about. That there's that song, Somebody That I Used to Know, Goite, I think, you know, back in the day. And it's, I think that was 2010. And it's been remade like 5 different times. And I think there's a Netflix series or something like that on called that, Somebody That I Used to Know. But I asked them about that. Like, how many of you have, you know, you go into a room and there's someone that you used to know.
But don't acknowledge them.
They all raise their hand. Like, you just... So how many times by the time you're 20 years old has a student been canceled? How much fear is there that you're going to get canceled again? Right? So you go along to get along, and so you're not developing deep relationships. You have girls in particular who will not criticize one another. They will not talk bad about each other. They will not correct each other. They only give support for fear of cancellation.
Yeah.
Right. And so these girls are growing up to be women who've never been corrected, they don't think that they're ever wrong. Right.
Yeah.
This isn't setting themselves up for marriage very well.
No.
You have boy, you know, and it's just anxiety, just anxiousness everywhere. And what happens when people are anxious? Well, they tend not to do anything. They tend not to risk. They tend not to achieve. They tend to be depressed.
Yeah.
I mean, depression and anxiety is just huge in our culture.
Well, one thing I will say, and we don't have to spend too much time on this, but one observation I made is, like, when you were talking, Mr. Young, about the expectations, the societal or familial expectations that you had when you were a young man, it was like, get married and start a family.
Yep.
You know, find a career, find a spouse, have children. You know, I was just thinking to myself how many more expectations there are, you know, things that children or people who are young adults transitioning that age are facing is questions of, what is my purpose?
Yeah.
Will I be happy?
Yeah.
Will I be successful?
Yeah.
Will I have enough money?
Yeah.
You know?
I think those are all normal questions, though.
Okay.
I don't think they carried as much weight when I was younger, because you had a lot of assumptions. Like, you know, it was just assumed that you can pursue a career, that you can buy a house, that you can.
Oh,
it was just,
right.
It was just all assumed. And if I just worked hard, it would all work out. So today, I mean, there's some reasons behind it, and we'll talk about it, but today there is. Like, I don't know if I can make it. How am I going
to
afford it? How am I going to...
I don't know if I can afford a house. Yeah, exactly.
Right.
Yeah.
And so it's bad, right? And part of it is you have, on behalf of Gen Xers and those who've come before, I just want to humbly apologize for the world that we have left you guys. but part of it is like, it's in no one's political agenda. Like, you
No.
Like, this is bad. Like, yeah. The average age of marriage now is 30 or even beyond now. There's less and less kids being born. People don't.
Yeah.
Right. So I remember talking to one politician about, look at all these apartments being built everywhere.
Yeah.
Where are the single family homes being built that aren't McMansions?
Right.
Right. That are like 2-bedroom starter homes.
Yeah.
They're not being built. They're these huge monstrous.
Yeah.
They're only 3 bedrooms and 2 baths, but they're like 5,000 square feet. You know, it's just like, it's crazy. Like, I grew up a family of 5, my mom, my dad, 3 brothers, our house was 880 square feet.
No kidding.
Yeah. No basement. And we grew up in that.
Wow. 880 square feet. Wow.
880 square foot.
Yeah.
That whole house can fit in my first floor at my house now.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? It's like, it's crazy.
Yeah.
Like, what? Now the expectations is my house would be a modest house and it should be something bigger, 3,000 square feet, 4,000 square feet, whatever.
Yeah.
Well, if your starter home is, I mean, you can't afford that as a starter home. Like, how do you do it? And so I was talking to one politician, and they said that part of their thinking is that if they could build these apartments and condos in our area, they can entice older, you know, the empty nesters to move out of their homes and into these apartments, leaving some of the more affordable single family dwellings for starter homes.
Yeah.
And it is not working at all. Huh. Like I'm, my wife and I were almost, we have one child left. We have a 5-bedroom, 2-bath house.
Yeah.
You're right. Big yard. It's great. I love it. We're going to downsize soon. I'm not going to a condo. I'm not going to an apartment.
Yeah.
Why would I pay rent?
Right.
Like, I don't get that. Like, it sounded very stupid. Like, I think I looked at him like incredulously. Like, are you kidding me? And most of the apartments being built are subsidized, which means it's driving up rent everywhere, which means young people won't be able to afford any kind of down payment on any kind of home because they have to pay all this money.
Yeah.
For rent.
Oh yeah.
It's crazy. So they're going to be in a subsidized living situation. And as soon as they start making more money, the subsidy goes away. So they're still at zero. They're still nowhere. Like, how long is it going to take for them to get out of that?
Yeah.
Like, so don't ever go into a subsidized living situation if you ever want to buy a home. That's my,
yeah,
seriously.
Yeah.
Live with your parents in the basement for a few years and get a down payment and then go. It's worth it because you're not going to get out of the subsidized housing situation. It's crazy. But this is, the anxiety and the they're feeling guilty for the past without knowing that it's guilt. It they're feeling anxious about the future. Their lives are not very productive. And we'll talk about that next episode. And they don't see, they don't have hope to get them out. Right? Some of them don't, you know, while they're young, they don't care. They're just going to enjoy themselves.
Yeah.
And they think, oh, I can get married when I'm 30. I'm not going to look around. I'm not going to look for a wife until I'm older. Or I'm not going to look for a husband until I'm older.
Or I can't get married until I'm 30 because I need to have
these,
you know. Yeah.
Yeah. So part of it is there isn't an affordability thing. Part of it is foolish decisions that younger people and their parents have made, like going off to college and getting massive amounts of debt.
Yeah.
Like, if you come away with a bachelor's degree and $40,000 worth of debt, like what do you think's going to happen?
Yeah.
Like, I don't get that.
Yeah.
Right. Maybe if you're going to be an engineer or an accountant who can make 6 figures, like almost right off the bat, you know, some debt isn't that bad. You can pay it as long as you pay it off right away.
Yeah.
Like, I've talked to people who like still owe money from college when they were in college in the 1990s.
Wow.
And they owe more money than they borrowed because they've only paid the minimum, which is barely the interest rates. And it's just, that's on them for being foolish.
Yeah.
Like, how do you not know that?
Right.
How do you say I'm stupid without saying I'm stupid, right? Is that the meme, you know,
yeah,
whatever it is?
Yeah.
It's like,
exactly.
Oh, I got I owe $60,000 in college debt. I borrowed $30,000.
Right.
That's telling me something about you, right? my wife and I both got out of college with no debt, but I took on some debt when for graduate school. I took on about $17,000. That was a lot of money at one point. I just want to let you know. So don't. I see how you're looking at me. No, but that, back then it was quite a bit. And we lived a Spartan-like existence, and we paid it off in a couple of years.
I like that. Spartan-like existence.
Why? Because we didn't want to have debt hanging over us. Yeah. We did everything in our power to get out of that debt so that we can buy a house.
Yeah.
And, you know, it's decisions. But a lot of it is the need for hope, right?
Right.
If you're anxious about the future, you're not going to make good decisions.
Yeah.
And you're not going to be ambitious, and you're not going to be busting your hump to find a way.
Mm-hmm.
You're going to be depressed and sad, and you're going to spend your time playing video games and scrolling through the internet.
Right.
Right. And this is what we've made, the world we've made. It also, with all the social media and other things, and the algorithms being used, are simply reinforcing young people's preconceived idea of their world. Like, everyone else is having a good life but me. Everyone, I just need to do this and to be happy. I just need to do this to be happy. And they're not going to be happy.
No.
So what's needed, Noah, is a reestablishment of Christian values in our community. Really. I mean, seriously, it's going to have to be Christians, those who believe in the Lord Jesus Christ, who have been called by him, are going to have to work on a way to develop a culture in our world that's conformed to reality.
Yeah.
And shows the way out of sin and guilt, so that people can once again have a good life.
Yeah.
So we'll talk about next episode how faith in Jesus Christ provides the faith, hope, and love needed for an anxious culture to get out of their malaise. Okay?
Yeah.
So that's kind of where we're at right now. So the fruit of all this stupid stuff that I just ranted about a lot, I know, last episode.
Well, we got to know where we are.
We got to know where we're at. We are. This is all human construct, right? And it's really good at blaming the oppressor. What you'll notice is that they blame a lot of this on Christianity.
Yeah.
Christian nationalism or whatever, like Christian nationalists are the biggest threat to our democracy. It's all so stupid. It's just, the response for a lot of people is, because they're afraid of how this is going to make them look, is they just back down from everything, because it puts them back into that guilt and anxiety, right? And that need to not be, the need to be liked and to, right? The real Christian answer to all that is just to laugh. It is. It's, I know I sounded angry. I am a little angry, but you know what? If people are going to accuse us of really stupid things.
Yeah.
And it's just fine to laugh at it.
Yeah.
In fact, I'm hoping that the 2024 election happens. I'm just kind of hoping that people are kind of done with racism. Like, can we just stop calling people racist? Like, hasn't it lost all its meaning and power?
Right.
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 Oh, you don't like that? You're a racist. Just laugh. Like, why don't you just laugh? Like, no, has nothing to do with race. That's silly. You know what I mean? Just
exactly.
Just laugh about it. Like, why? Come up with something better.
Yeah.
You know, it's old.
Yeah, it is.
But anyway, I guess I'll stop there. And next week we'll talk about faith, hope, and love, and how that's the way out of our malaise.